I'm Lori.
I'm Lori.
I'm a grateful adult child of an alcoholic, and not just one, but many. And you know what? I thought about what do I want to start out with tonight, and I think that the thing that I love best about ACA is I can say anything. I don't have to worry about talking about my food addiction. I don't have to worry about talking about my alcoholism or, you know, my wanting to fix everybody, my Al-Anon issues. You can't talk about all those things in all those other meetings, you know? And right now, I feel holistic. I feel like I'm a whole person. I get to be all those things in this room. In those other rooms, I get to be those things, you know? And I can compartmentalize. I know how to do that really well. It should be on the characteristics, right? Pretend you're this for this time, and pretend you're that for the next time. And I was really good at that growing up in an alcoholic home because, you know, I'm sure many of you are similar to me as like that chameleon. Who do you want me to be? Okay, you want me to be an alcoholic in this meeting? I'll be the alcoholic in the meeting. You know, food addict? Yeah, I can do that. So here I do get to be me. And so my story is multifaceted, and it does include all the things I've mentioned so far. And I just want to acknowledge that the forefathers and sisters that brought this program together were divinely inspired by the fact that we didn't have to negate any part of ourselves to be in this room. So, yay. Yeah. Experience, strength, and hope. I didn't know what time I started, so I'll kind of pay attention to that. When I say several alcoholics, my mom was, you know, my mother was an alcoholic. The five men that she married were alcoholics. My stepmother was an alcoholic. And I was up at that wonderful retreat. If you get a chance to go, I know you guys are having a retreat in January, and so we're looking forward to that. But the retreat that they do for ACA, they've done for about 25 years now, up in Camp de Benneville Pines. And somebody was qualifying, and they were sharing what they'd gone through, and I thought to myself, I don't do that anymore. You know, I don't really like count up things anymore. But I did just for fun that day. Fun. You know, like, what kind of fun is this, right? But my mom died as a direct result of this disease. She did die 35 years sober, so I am grateful for that. I have her witch earrings on tonight, so that's in honor of my mom who has passed away. But she did die as a direct result because she was addicted to pain medication by the time she died, and she had a morphine pump in her body and had 30 surgeries, and I was there for all of them because I was there every day for my mother from the day I was born until the day that she died. And she died at 2:00 in the morning. It was her last call. I mean, you know, they were closing time, and it was poetic, and so I was really glad to be there because she did bring me to these rooms. I have been in 12-step recovery for over 35 years, so, you know, way over half my life. Way over half my life. And I am grateful for that, you know. So her disease is what brought me here, and I can't imagine my life without it. So, you know, you hear other people in programs say that they're grateful, and I am grateful that I was an adult child and alcoholic because I got to have this amazing journey, and it wasn't a wonderful journey all the time, but it was pretty amazing. So she died direct of this disease. My sister died. She was a cocaine addict and then got clean and sober on her own. I don't know how people do that, but she did. Had a surgery and then became a Vicodin addict and died as a result at 36 of Vicodin addiction. My stepfather, I was sharing on the way up here because I came with a wonderful woman in my life, and I shared that my stepfather, who was very influential in my life, he died a hopeless, helpless, homeless alcoholic behind a dumpster in Las Vegas. My stepmother died of the disease. My own father died of cirrhosis of the liver. That's a lot. that's why I'm here, okay? And one of the things that I loved about going to Hawaii and going to an AA meeting in Kona was the way that they start their introduction of themselves. They would say, "Hi, I'm Lori, I belong." And I love it. Yeah, so I belong. And I think really, pretty sure that this is the first place ever that I really felt like I belonged. And not only do I belong, but I'm accepted, you know? You guys get it. Whatever your story is, it doesn't have to be, well, I only had 6 and she had 7, you know? It's not about that. It's about how we got here. And for me, once I got here, so you get that I earned my seat. Are we all on that page? Okay. So then I got here, and let me tell you, my journey is a little bit different. I was in college, and I don't know really how I got there, quite by accident. I barely got out of high school, and I wound up in college eventually when I was a reentry student. And a wonderful woman, you know how you have that one person in your life that you'll always remember? This woman was Ruth, and she was in Al-Anon, and I didn't really know about Al-Anon at the time. I was working in my OA program, my Overeaters Anonymous program, so I certainly knew about the 12 steps. But she was sharing something with me. She goes, "I think I have something that you should read." Now, she was just a fellow student. She wasn't a teacher. She wasn't. And so she handed me the laundry list. And this was in 1900 and... I think it was about 1981. Yeah. So we're talking about, you know, not only the last millennia, but many years ago. And I read it, and I broke down into tears. And it wasn't exactly the same as it is today, and it was a little different, and it doesn't matter, but all that mattered to me was I identified for the very first time, and I knew that if somebody had written this, there was another one of us out there, you know, that somebody else had actually gone through what I'd gone through. And I didn't feel so alone, and I hadn't met anybody yet, but I started going to ACA in the 80s. And, you know, and I did my whole master's thesis on adult children of alcoholics and the common characteristics of having been raised in the home in 1982, you know, 83. Did that heal me? No. Because if you stay up here instead of going down here, for me, I am, you know, if there's another AA, it's over, you know, maybe we call it OAA, Over Analyzers Anonymous, you know. I just did some trauma work recently, and one of the gentlemen who was running the seminar said, if you're someone who says, "Does that make sense?" a lot, you probably have a lot of trauma in your life. And I'm like, shit. Right? Like, not that I had, this is the validation. Do you understand? You do get this. I know, I see nodding heads. I love it. Okay? Like, I can tell you all the times, like, when I had to pick up my mom off the floor after someone beat her and had, you know, 2 black eyes and 26 stitches in her mouth and a broken nose, you know, that's not trauma. But to have this guy say to me, "Do you say that makes sense a lot?" And I'm like, oh my God, I say that 1,000 times a day. And he says, people who've had trauma say that because they need everything to be understood, right? That is one thing has come out of all of my trauma. I need to be understood to, like, the bazillionth, you know, like, people are going, yeah, no, but does that make sense? Do you get it? Like, are you connecting with me now, right? So I learned all these things, and then I learned in college that, you know, this was a real thing. And then, like many, I don't need to tell you what I do for a living, but I observe people for a living. That's what I get paid to do. Imagine that. They paid me to do what I did my whole life growing up. Like, you know? So, you know, in this observation, I get to see, okay, you know, I know where I sit, and I know when things are going down, and I've been able to see that clearly. and I totally lost what I was going to say, but that happens too, you know. In the meantime, this is the observation. Thank you, God. I came back to ACA about, I don't know, what do you think, Charles, 5.5 years ago now? Does that sound about right? Yeah, keep track of me because I don't keep track of myself all the time. About 5.5 years ago, I would say, maybe 6 years ago even at this point. And my observation is there were many of us who were coming back right around, you know, the late 40s, early 50s. I'm not talking about 1940 and 1950. I'm talking about ages, okay? So for me, I got abstinent and was abstinent, you know, pretty much for the most part for about 30 years, okay? I got sober. I was sober for 30 years at the time. I was sober for 30 years at the time. I'd gone to Al-Anon. I'd done everything, and yet my life was still like, holy crap, right? And I see people who are clean, they're sober, they're living their life, they're working the 12 steps in some program, and yet it's just not quite enough. And I would like to say that I wandered into the room in Ojai and said, you know, my life is just not quite enough right now. But that's not how I came in. I came in like, holy shit, my life is falling apart after 30 years of sobriety, you know, 30 years of abstinence, and, you know, so what I've noticed is people went off and did their thing, and I went off and did my thing after I learned about ACA. I did my thing. I went, you know, I got married a couple of times, and I had kids, and, you know, I married someone who was 20 years older than me to begin with, and had 5 kids. I was a stepmom of 5 kids when I was, like, 19, you know. Big surprise. Like, who grows up in a whole healthy household and then makes whole healthy choices? Yeah, they do. Who grows up in a dysfunctional household and goes out and makes whole healthy choices? Well, if they do, I don't know them, okay? So now, you know, I have done all these things and I'm quite accomplished, someone who didn't go to college and still goes to college every day now, and yet my life was falling apart because I had become so addicted because of being raised in the alcoholic home to fixing things, fixing everybody, being on call 24/7, my mom, the kids, the stepdads, the stepmoms, the, you know, the people in the elevator, everybody, okay? And then all of a sudden, they were all grown up and they left. My kids left. My husband was doing his thing. There was nobody to fix. My mom died. She was gone. There was nobody to fix. And I was like an addict who was going through withdrawals. And I needed someone to fix, and there was nobody left. Except for whom?
Me.
And then it was the me time. And at the meeting last night in Ojai, we were doing some reading out of the wonderful meditation book, and part of the things that it talked about was championing the cause of our own existence, right? And it didn't say it exactly like that, but because my fellow traveler who I hang out with once in a while said it like that, that's what I remember it as. And I was told it's okay to champion the cause of my own existence. And I have to tell you, that was like someone saying to me, you're going to have to skydive without a parachute and speak French all the way down to save your life. Okay? And I don't speak French. I have skydived, but I did with a parachute. And I didn't know what that meant, to champion the cause of my own existence. I had no idea, but I knew it was time to do it, and I wanted to learn. And so I listened, and I learned, and I worked the steps, and we did the workbook study, and we started more meetings, and then we started another meeting, and did more work. And I learned step by step, little bit by little bit, to champion the cause of my own existence. I was sharing on the way up here, once I figured out, you know, the Al-Anon, you know, if you're anybody in Al-Anon here, one of the things I learned in Al-Anon was don't do for others what they can do for themselves, right? So I found that out. I went straight home and did nothing for my family, right? And they all went into trauma and, like, because that's the all or nothing. I learned something new. I'm going to apply it, and you're going to be happy about that, right? So wise people told me differently, like, well, maybe you have to wean them. Oh, weaning a 22-year-old child, that's a good time to wean, because I couldn't do it at 22 months, so it's probably okay now. So I had to learn these things. Do you understand? I didn't know how in the hell would I have ever learned how to do what I had to learn how to do. And what I love about us is, like, not, there is no guru here. And all those other programs, you have a sponsor, and your sponsor tells you to push a peanut across the room, and you push a peanut, and they tell you to get here early and do that, and do all these things. It's like, you know, it's kind of like having that big brother or sister telling you what to do, and you just want to smack them, but you do it, right? But here, nobody's telling us what to do. And I have to tell you that the people that surrounded me when I first got to ACA, and we kind of do this together, because we started a lot of meetings together, we didn't know what we were doing, and there was no such thing as a sponsor. You know, there was no sponsor. So it was kind of like, let's just all work together. And it kind of reminded me, because I didn't really do this, because I was not the person who played on the playground. I was the person with the teacher hoping to get some attention. Do you know what I'm saying here? Because if I'm in the classroom with the teacher, then I'm with a positive role model other than some crazy, and I would tell them, you know what's happening in my house? You know, I would tell anybody, the best, nobody did anything back then, you know? So now in ACA, I'm on the playground and we're all on the playground together, but we got each other's back. It's kind of like the, I don't even know, what is that, the Lord of Rings of the Rings, or what is, no, what are the, all the little boys, the lost boys that all get together and they take care of each other? And I don't really, I just want to say, I don't think there is anybody like, oh, you are so great, I want to be like you, I want to be like you, I want to be. There's people in this program, I think to myself, I want that. And the next day they do something like, I do not want that. And that's okay. That's okay. I'm learning, they're learning, we're learning together. And thank God we have that guidebook. Because back in 1982, there was not a guidebook. So that big red guidebook is my guide, you know? And working those steps together, and we did it together, it was amazing. And you know what? I looked around the room today at my meeting, and there were only two of us left that had gone through that together. And that was the exact same person that said to me, you need to champion the cause of your own existence. And that person is the next speaker, and I love him dearly, and I'm going to let him talk now. Thanks.